Hello, West Liberty. You are listening to 91.5 WGLZ. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. You are joining me for part 3 of my 4-part Passionately Vocal series. This is called Faculty Focus. Joining me in the radio studio is the Dean of the College of Liberal and Creative Arts, Dr. Cecilia Conchar-Farr. In addition to being the Dean of the college, she teaches some classes, she's an author, she's taught at other schools, so overall she wears a lot of hats. So we're going to do, this interview is going to be in 2 parts. So part A, I like to get to know the guests a little bit, kind of in their like background and stuff, and then we'll take a quick about a minute long break, and we'll come back for part B and dive a little bit into West Liberty and that type of stuff. So thank you for joining us. So how did you get into like English and writing? Because you're an author, and so how did you kind of get into that stuff?
I recently got from my 4th grade teacher a letter I wrote her at the end of the school year where she asked us to identify, because we were her first class ever, identify ourselves and draw a picture of ourselves. And the picture was really bad, but the letter was kind of entertaining. It said, "You'll remember me because I'm the one who read a lot." So I feel like I started very young wanting to read and reading ravenously. And then, of course, wanting to write kind of follows that. So in college, I studied literature, but also journalism. And after I graduated, I was a reporter for a few years and then went back to school because I hadn't learned enough yet. And that's how I went on the pathway to higher ed.
Yeah, so you have a PhD in English. What is that experience like getting your doctorate degree?
You know, a lot of people have a really brutal experience, but mine was amazing. I went to Michigan State University. I was studying literary theory and modern literature, both British and American, and then a little bit of earlier American literature. So it was stuff I loved and I loved to read about. And then I had a mentor who was just exceptional. She met with me every week, bought me lunch, had me talk to her about what I was thinking the whole time I was writing my dissertation. And I had a great community of other graduate students who were still friends. So it was a very positive experience, but it was also like mind-blowing, expansive, thinking all the time, writing all the time. It was really brilliant. I loved it.
So that dissertation, that's a lot of effort. How do you keep yourself motivated? Like, that's a big thing, right?
Yeah, that was my first book, and I learned how to write a book from that experience. There's a famous quote from Anne Lamott, the writer, when her little brother was overwhelmed by an assignment to write about birds. They asked her writer father how to get through it, and he said, "Take it bird by bird." And I think that's the way you have to do it. You can't think, I'm writing a book. You think, I'm writing this many pages today, or I'm writing my chapter by Friday. And just, I think I'm one of those people who loves having written. Like, the process of writing is difficult, but I feel such a sense of accomplishment when I do it that I really enjoy it.
Yeah. So, like, when you do get that kind of writer's block, what are kind of your things that you do to kind of eliminate that a little bit?
The only thing that I think you can do is just sit down and write. I always talk about, I used to lead a group of faculty for how to get their articles done and how to get their publishing done. And they would always say, "I can't find the time." And I always say, "You have to make the time." So I've put it in my schedule just like it was a class. So if you have 3 hours of writing time, say on Tuesday and Thursday morning, and somebody says, "Can you come to a meeting?" I would say, "No, that's my writing time." So I think just making sure that you do it and you keep on doing it is the only way to get through it.
So you've written a lot of books. Do you have one that maybe like your favorite that you really think is like maybe powerful, or one that you really enjoyed writing?
I put a lot of effort into the book called The Ulysses Delusion because it sort of lays out a thesis for the way I think about studying and talking about literature. It's very reader-centered, and it tries to take seriously what readers like about novels. So I really enjoy that one. But right now, I have one coming out in a few weeks, and I have to be pretty excited about that. It's a guide to reading Gertrude Stein's novel, The Making of Americans, and she's a really weird experimental writer. And so a student and I got together and made a guide for how to get through this novel after we read it in a class. So really happy about that coming out.
And I think that's something pretty interesting to me, is it's like two people can read the same book and kind of get something completely different out of it. And I think that that's something that you kind of, that's like cool to you, is that like two people can read your writing and get completely different messages out of
that's
it.
That's my favorite thing about reading. Like, teaching literature classes is just a joy, because I come in, like, say The Great Gatsby, I've taught over and over. Every time I read it with a group of students, I learn something new. I read The Yellow Wallpaper, this little short story, with a group of students last fall, and they just exploded my interpretation of that in all different directions. And I've been teaching for like 30-some years, so it blew me away. Yes, that's the most delightful thing about writing, is people read different things and have different responses, and that's what makes a literature class so lively.
So is that kind of like where, like, your passion for teaching just comes from, like, getting different, like, kind of opinions and different inputs on the same thing?
And watching people think about things, like accepting the challenge to move their brain in a different direction. I finally figured out when I taught them things that they were already interested in reading, they would be even more engaged in class discussion. So for years, I taught a Harry Potter class because everybody knew Harry Potter. They all had theories. They had things they wanted to talk about. And the discussions were just so rich. They had to wait for each other to talk because everyone wanted to talk. There were none of those weird pauses. And yeah, so that's exactly right. That wild tangling of opinions and ideas is what I live for.
So if you didn't get into, like, English and writing, is there something else that you think maybe you would have been passionate enough to do, like, as a career?
I can't even, there was at one moment when I read a lot of Nancy Drew books when I thought I might be a private investigator, but really there's been nothing else since I was a little kid that I was so excited about. My journalism career was really rewarding, and I might have stayed with that, except I just really felt like I needed to know so much more. Everybody expects you to know things when you're a journalist, but as soon as I got back to school, I was deep into literature, so.
Yeah. And you went to three different colleges to get your bachelor's, your master's, and your PhD. Is there, like, a reason that you, like, is it just maybe different perspectives from different universities, or what was the reason you did that?
Well, I went to Slippery Rock because it was 3 miles from my front door to the front door of the English building. That was convenient, and I rode my bicycle a lot, stayed with my family so I could afford it. And then I went to Brigham Young because I was raised Mormon, and that's the Mormon school, so I was very attracted to trying to figure out what it would be like to be in a community of Mormons. That wasn't so great for me, kind of restrictive for my sort of freewheeling personality. And then I ended up getting a fellowship to go to Michigan State to study, and there were some really terrific people there, like the dissertation advisor I was telling you about. So Michigan State was, because I was sort of recruited to go there to get my PhD.
Hmm. Yeah. So to wrap up this first segment, is there, like, a fun fact or something that maybe a lot of people don't know about you that you think that would be interesting for people to know?
I have this secret homemaker side. Like, I really love to bake. And when I bring in baked goods, people are like, this is Dean, and you write books and bake. But I discover baking and crocheting, and I had to make all my own clothes when I was a kid. So I have all these secret, what do they call the housewife thing now? Not the housewife thing. Oh, there's a tradwife. I have a secret tradwife side, I should say that.
So we're going to wrap up part A. So we've gotten into kind of discussing some of her background and everything. So when we come back for part B, I want to discuss a little bit more about her time at West Liberty, why she came here, and kind of maybe some things that deans do and stuff like that. So we're going to take about a minute break. Don't go anywhere. Stay locked on 91.5 WGLZ. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. Have you reached out to your advisor for scheduling? West Liberty University has almost 2,000 undergraduate students within its over 60 majors.
Hello, West Liberty students.
The later you schedule, the less likely you are to get into the classes you want. This could cause you to miss out on that important prerequisite you really need, delaying your graduation.
Oh no!
You don't want to be the only one in your friend group not taking that important class. Don't get stuck with that boring 8 a.m. lab class that only has 5 people in it, or the late night class you can barely stay awake for.
Maybe you could even schedule a long weekend. Make all your classes count this semester. Avoid the stress and stay on pace to graduate by reaching out to your advisor today to get your alternate PIN and get registered. If you don't know who your advisor is, check DegreeWorks or email registrar@westliberty.edu. This message has been brought to you by WGLZ Radio.
We are back on 91.5 WGLZ. If you're just joining us, I'm here in the studio with Dr. Cecilia Concharfar, the Dean of the College of Liberal and Creative... The Dean of the College of Liberal and Creative Arts. So in the first segment, we discussed some of her background and kind of like some stuff that's gone on outside of the universe, outside of West Lib and that type of thing. This second half, I really want to dive into her experience at West Liberty and stuff and kind of, you know, break into some of that stuff. So I'm interested. So in 2021, they combined the College of Liberal Arts, right, and the College of Communications.
Arts and Communication was one. Arts and Comm was one.
Arts and Communication, and then
and then Liberal Arts.
Liberal Arts, okay. So, and then you got appointed as the dean of the college. So, like, did you kind of seek out that position, or did they reach out to you, or what brought you to, like, want to be interested in West Liberty?
I was very interested in moving back to this area. This is where I grew up and feel very comfortable here. And when you apply for jobs in higher education, there are ads and they're for jobs all over the country. So what I had been looking for was a leadership opportunity that was somewhere in this area. And I saw this ad for West Lib, and I was super excited because it reminded me a lot of my experience with Slippery Rock, where there were a lot of first generation students, and it's a regional state school that has a mission to serve that area. So it really spoke to me. And when I applied, I was really happy to get an interview. And then the first time I came to the Hilltop, I was like, oh, yeah, this is the place. This is really good.
Yeah. I think it's nice. It's kind of a smaller universe. I mean, you taught it. You taught
St. Catherine.
St. Catherine. That's in what, Minnesota?
Uh huh.
And is that a bigger university?
It's a women's university. Well, there's a women's college at the center of the university. So I taught mainly women students, and there were about 2,500 at the most, and then often a little smaller than that. But and then there were lots of graduate students, healthcare mostly.
Yeah, so pretty similar then. So do you like that kind of like the smaller? I know there's a lot of people are drawn to like the big universities. You got to go to the big university to get the best education. Are you kind of more drawn to these smaller universities, you know, 20, 30 classes, 30 people classes?
Yeah, 100%. I think that is the best undergraduate experience. I spent one year of my undergraduate degree at Brigham Young, and it was huge. It was like 30,000 students. And the first thing I had to do when I got there was memorize my Social Security number, because I wasn't a name, I was a number. And every time you reported to an office, you had to give them your number. And then I went to Slippery Rock, where immediately faculty knew my name. They would say things like, oh, I see you're really interested in this topic. Here's a book that I like that you might like. And it was much more personal. It was just a really engaging undergraduate experience. And so if anybody ever asks me, I say small school for undergrad. And then if you're ready to go to graduate school, those big research institutions are great. I mean, you build a community there with the people who are in your field, so it doesn't feel so huge. But I really do think the smaller schools, especially one like this that is so dedicated to making sure every student succeeds.
Yeah. So you're the dean of a college that maybe there's a lot of majors that people would say, you know, what good does that make? You know, like you look at like communications, you look at some of these majors, and a lot of people out there are like skeptical. They're like, what is the purpose? Like, how do you challenge those people that say that these majors aren't worth having?
There's a whole bunch of great speeches about all the leaders in the tech fields and political leaders and what their undergraduate majors are. And they were history and English and communication and things like that, art. Even, I mean, really majors that expand the way you think, that help you to be creative and to be problem solvers. So I always say, instead of it from point A to point B, you take these classes, you become this. that the liberal arts, humanities, and social sciences majors have a more exploratory path. And on the way, students learn a lot about themselves and the world. And then when they come out of here, they have a whole bunch of options. It's not just point B. It's point D, E, F to Z.
Yeah. So you kind of look at it as like people should be kind of well-rounded. You don't just want to focus on one thing because you never know kind of where that's going to go.
Yeah. For me, education, of course, as an English professor, isn't always about getting a job. I mean, it's important that we do have an opportunity to get a job at the end. But for me, it's about educating the individual student and for them to live a whole life that doesn't just take place in the 8 hours they're at work.
Yeah, so you would just say that maybe people focus too much on I got to get a job and not so much on how can I be kind of better as a person and like improve myself type of thing.
Yeah, that there needs to be balance with those two. Mm. But I definitely understand why. I mean, when I was an undergrad, I had a journalism emphasis in my English major because I was a working class kid and people asked me all the time, what are you going to do with that? And I had to have a very clear point B. So I get it. It makes sense. You don't want to spend all that money on college and then be unemployed. But I think that the balance when we're here should be both on preparing for a career and on preparing for a whole rich life.
Yeah. So like there's a lot of people out there that maybe they want to get into university or maybe they're already in college, but maybe they either are undecided or they're looking to switch. Maybe they're not into kind of what they're doing. What kind of advice do you give to those type of people that maybe they're not quite sure where they're at?
That's what the general studies courses are for. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of us think about the general studies as just a list of things you need to check off, but the reason you're doing that is to find all the things that you might be interested in, to have a broad experience so you can say, oh yeah, this is what I want. I had this really smart student one time. I tried really hard to get her to be an English major. She was a pianist. She could do just about anything. And she didn't know what she wanted to major in. And about the end of her sophomore year, she came to me and said, I found it. She took an economics class and just freaked out. It was the best thing ever. And she became an economist. And she's really good at it. But it was only by, you know, going through those general studies requirements that she had to take that class that she discovered her passion.
Mm-hmm. So that's really it. I know a lot of people, they're like, man, these general studies, it's like, I just want to do my major stuff. But it's like, maybe that's good to have those because maybe you either, you know, you like something that you get in your general studies that maybe you wouldn't grab onto otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that happen so many times. I mean, what did I even know about astronomy going into college? That was one of my best classes I ever had. Astronomy, oceanography, things I'm still interested in. And my logic class was the best writing class I ever had, but it was a philosophy class on logic. It's just things you encounter unexpectedly that are there to, you know, expand your brain.
So kind of, you're a teacher, you're the dean, you're a writer, kind of, like, what's your kind of, like, daily routine? Like, what all are you responsible for? What is your, like, day-to-day life kind of like?
So I think of my job as getting faculty and students the resources they need so that things go smoothly for them. So any kind of problem solving, any ways that I can get people together to figure things out, and any way that I can just smooth the path for people. I do spend some time thinking and writing, but not as much as I used to. I sort of miss that. I think when I retire, I'll just go into a room with a pile of books and sit there for a couple of years. Mostly there's a lot of emails and memos and that sort of thing. There's a lot of engagement with the larger university. So we have a really good leadership team of the provost and four deans who do a lot of work together. Our new registrar is a really important part of our team. And that's all of our job, that the administration is there to serve the faculty and students, which that really speaks to me because I was a faculty member for a long time. And we always thought that administration shouldn't be there to give orders and inform, that they should be there to work with us and clear the path so that we can succeed.
So how does that contrast to like the chair of a department? Is it kind of similar, just maybe like on a bigger scale?
Yeah. In fact, my most important constituency is probably the group of my chairs. Mm. So when they need help, they come to me and we come together as a group and figure out how to resolve situations and problems together. And I share information they need to have instead of there are things that that they need to guide the faculty through what has to be accomplished. And yeah, we work on that together. So yeah, it is. I was a chair for a long time. Being a dean is more demanding time-wise, but it's a very similar position.
So is there anything that maybe you would like to be able to accomplish at the university that's for some reason you're kind of held back from?
I would really like for the two colleges that were separate to become truly one college, where they see each other as colleagues and enjoy working together. I still feel like we haven't quite made it to that point, that there's the fine arts building over there and Maine and the library over there, and that we don't come together enough. So I spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to create community among the faculty and students across my college.
I find it interesting, like, even within the Fine Arts Building, there's the two halves of the Fine Arts Building, and I think a lot of times you look at, like, the communications music side and, like, the art side, and even they kind of feel not distinctly different, but you can kind of feel a little bit of a different vibe on the two sides of that building.
Yeah, and everyone should have a sense of their small community. That's great, but I'd also like for us to feel like we belong to one another as a college.
Yeah, and I do think there's a lot of overlap kind of between, like, you know, like, I saw there was an article on the Trumpet, and, like, they kind of described, like, there's a lot of overlap in, like, communications and English and arts and those type of things.
Yeah. We're talking a lot about interdisciplinary, like, having in the geography major, having required courses in political science and criminal justice so that we come together more. We have a learning community right now that is a group of three faculty teaching courses that overlap, and they're drawing out what the overlap is along the theme of sustainability. So I love it when we get together like that, too, when we see how relevant our fields are to one another.
So is there anything else that you'd like to bring up or add to our discussion before we wrap up?
Well, it's a really tense time of the semester, and if this is going to air before the holiday, I have a bunch of people writing papers right now, and I would just like to encourage everyone to keep going. We're almost there.
Yeah. About another month. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, not quite that long. Yeah, I guess it is.
Let's see. Today is, what, the 14th? What is it? It's the 12th, right?
It's dead week when we get back. So next week is the week before Thanksgiving. And when we get back, it's dead week. So it should slow down.
Yeah. All right. And that has been part 3 of my 4-part Passionately Vocal series here on 91.5 WGLZ. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. Thank you, Dr. Cecilia Conchar-Farr, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now let's get back to the music. Here's How to Love by Lil Wayne.